The scripture reading for today is Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 34. That's Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 34. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat? Or what shall we drink? Or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble.
All right, we're continuing with our summer series, Growing in Grace. And we're looking at these classic, time-tested spiritual practices, habits, disciplines that help us grow in our appreciation for who Jesus is, our love for him, and also just our really rich and deep enjoyment of the life that he calls us to together. And today, we're looking at a discipline, we're actually looking at a whole life, but then a particular discipline that leads us into that life, which I've often found intriguing. It's somewhat very appealing to me, and yet it's one that often just seems very elusive. And that is the life and the discipline of what we're going to say call simplicity. If you just read throughout the span of church history, going all the way back to, you know, the early ascetics or the monks or just any kind of pastoral, spiritual, theological leadership of the church, they've always just talked about just the importance of the pursuit of simplicity in life and as helping us to grow in our love for Christ and enjoyment of the life that he calls us to. And so here's the thing. I wanted to say right from the beginning, we're starting to get into some of these disciplines or these practices or habits that, okay, maybe you've heard about, but you haven't thought too much about or haven't talked a whole lot about, or maybe start to sound a little strange, like who actually fasts anymore, or Okay, if suburban American life is anything, it's usually not characterized as being simple, right? So it's something that we consider a little bit strange. And anytime we're in these practices or we talk about these things that sound strange or we're not so familiar with, the danger we have to be careful of is that we would ever start thinking of these things as stuff that we're doing or that we're putting into practice as some sort of religious ritual, strange, cold religious ritual to, I don't know what, make God happy or to earn brownie points, you know, with God. Please, let's remember, that's not why we're having these conversations, not why we're talking about this. The overriding goal here is that we would grow, again, in grace, that we would grow in our love and appreciation of Christ and genuinely grow in the enjoyment of the life that he has called us to. Right? We're not trying to earn brownie points. We're not trying to keep God happy or something like that. Okay, so I have to say that. So anyway, we're talking about simplicity today. Interesting one, elusive one, kind of a strange one maybe. And I want to start actually by talking about anxiety this morning. You have in the passage, this is one of those infamous passages where we hear Jesus say, don't be anxious about your life. Which right away makes me anxious because Jesus says, don't be anxious, but I know I get anxious sometimes. Well, if Jesus tells me not to be anxious, but I'm getting anxious, now I'm anxious that I'm not doing what Jesus is telling me that I need to be doing, right? But I want to talk about this business of anxiety. Actually, on the cultural level, anxiety is getting a lot of press these days. There are a lot of psychologists, scientists, researchers that are taking a pretty hard look at anxiety, mainly because we are seeing, certainly in the West, in American culture, we're seeing a steady and alarming rise in, you know, the rates of disabling anxiety that people are experiencing, especially in young people, children even. But teens and adolescents, I think the statistic now is that they're expecting that 1 in 3 adolescents at some point are going to experience some form of debilitating anxiety, right? So these got a lot of guys are rightfully looking into this a little bit more, trying to get a handle of it. And what I'm finding is kind of interesting is that you have a lot of people right now, as they talk about anxiety, we're not talking about anxiety so much the way that in the recent past we often thought about it, in the sense that we're not simply talking about it as sort of this glitch, maybe, in the chemical processes of the brain that you just treat with medication or something. Or we're not just talking about it as this sort of unhealthy thing that we have to manage or learn sort of certain tools or skills to just kind of, you know, how to manage it or how to do life with anxiety. Rather, what is interesting is you have a lot of people starting to say, actually, we kind of think anxiety is more of a signal that something is not right in life. Right? Evolutionary biologists actually are all about this right now. They're saying that actually anxiety is not this glitch in the brain, or it's not this bad thing that we have to kind of manage and figure out, but actually it's a healthy thing that, you know, is like a warning signal to us that something is not quite right in life. And so there's all this research being done now, try to look at anxiety through that angle, which is really fascinating. Can't get into all of that this morning, other than to say that then for a lot of people, where the next step is, okay, we kind of think that what anxiety is signaling, one of the issues in life that is producing anxiety is, especially for Americans, there's just too much in life. There's too much stuff on your calendar, consuming your life, right? Too many appointments, too many responsibilities, too many things that you have to get to, right? Life is just busy, busy, busy. And that's just consuming your life. Or there are too many expectations in life, right? We feel the pressure to keep up with the Joneses, maybe. or you know, more importantly, speaking of young people again, right? Young people are feeling more and more the pressure and the expectation to be well-rounded individuals and well-rounded students. So you're good at this and you're good at that and the other, so you have increased chances and opportunities to get into the good college so that you can come out and get a decent job and you can measure up to the standards of success that our culture would hold out. And that's, you know, perhaps anxiety-producing. Or just even they'll talk about how, you know, in our addiction now to social media, Instagram and Facebook, where we see everybody post about their fun and exciting and meaningful lives, right? That causes us to introspect and to look at our lives and say, well, is my life producing as much meaning or excitement or fun? Or now, apparently, because of TikTok, we all have to be good dancers. That's what Megan was telling me the other night. She's trying to explain TikTok to me now. So now I have to feel bad that I'm not really a good dancer. I don't know what. So too much stuff on our calendar, too many expectations, and don't even get started on how much just general stuff we have in our homes, right? The American consumption mentality. I won't give you all the statistics. Other than I'll give you the one statistic that I always like to hold on to. We have, 3% of the world's children, but we consume 40% of the world's toys. This is because I'm always feel like I'm always tripping over a toy from time to time, and so I'm always trying to, anyway, Amy's going to hate that I said. Sorry, Amy. Okay, but we could also say this, that with the accumulation of stuff comes responsibility. Think about this, especially in relation to technology, right? We live in a day and age where you have to have iPhone, iPad, iWatch, iTV, all these things. And what is technology? It's stuff that wears out. It's stuff that becomes out of fashion or out of date or whatever. And so we're always having to replace. We're always having to fix. We're always having to upgrade. So, right, so stuff is not just this innocent stuff, this thing, but it's something that, okay, it requires our attention. It requires time. It requires our energy. It requires our finances. The point is, all this stuff, dates, expectations, material things. And so there's this actual big movement out there now that here's how we're going to deal with anxiety. We're just going to simplify, simplify, simplify. We're going to get rid of stuff. We're going to declutter or de-stuffocate is a phrase you'll might come across. And this is big business. We've got books being written about it. There was a hit show on Netflix, Marie Kondo, about a year ago on how to simplify your life. You can hire a simplification consultant that will come in and do this for you. Okay, so simplicity actually is a trendy thing in our culture right now. I just want to push that a little bit further and say, well, actually, so again, some of these psychologists and researchers, they're saying, okay, yeah, that's good. Maybe simplicity will help that. But we have to go a little bit deeper, they're saying. Because, okay, you get rid of stuff, but if anybody is actually ever getting rid of stuff, what you find is that all of a sudden that just creates all this room to fill it back up with more stuff. Because there's something in us that has this tendency to do that, to fill up our schedules, to fill up our homes, to fill up our minds with all these expectations, and they're trying to get to the bottom of that. You know, and so they're going back and they're reading old philosophers who have said to us for 1,000 years, hey, if your life is the pursuit of stuff, status, success, you're going to feel pretty lousy. They would say that's a junk food philosophy. Just like junk food will cause you physically to be sick, if you consume over time, that philosophy, it's a junk food philosophy that will make you feel sick. And what's interesting is that we, for the first time, we actually have scientists researching this and are coming away saying, yes, actually, if your life is lived in the pursuit and the accumulation of stuff and status and success, you have a higher statistical rate of some sort of debilitating anxiety. And then they're also saying, but there's this, another problem, that we live in a machine that is constantly feeding to us. We're like on a feeding tube, feeding us this junk food philosophy that life is the accumulation, the attainment of material stuff, status, and success. So in other words, you have a lot of people on a cultural level realizing that we're in something of a sick, right, culture, where we have this machine feeding us that this is what life is, and yet realizing that on the same hand, that philosophy produces increased rates of anxiety, not to mention increased rates of loneliness and despair, or not, or then you have other people talk about, well, that's part of the problem with, you know, social inequities or social injustice or, you know, the abuses of the planet, all this stuff, right? All right, I don't want to go too much deeper into that, other than to say, so there is this interesting recognition of anxiety, its causes, interesting discussion about simplicity, interesting discussions going on about deeper things in our own hearts and lives and what we're being fed. And it's kind of into this backdrop that I want to look at Matthew 6. Okay, I want to just give a little bit of attention to how Jesus talks about anxiety. And I'm going to look at three things. We're going to look at, for Jesus, what the real problem is with anxiety. We're going to look at, with Jesus, what the alternative to anxiety and anxious life is. And then we're going to look at Jesus, how we get there. Okay? Those three things we're looking at. So first of all, the problem with the anxious life. If you see there in the passage, first of all, starting up in verse 19, we get these three little short little snippets, little wisdom sayings or a set of instructions. First of all, says don't lay up treasures where moth and rust destroy or thieves break in and steal. Okay, kind of a no-brainer. Don't be stupid. Don't put your money in a bank that has been successfully robbed a half a dozen times over the past week, or don't go out and purchase a fancy treasure and leave it out in the rain or put it down in the basement where rust or, you know, or moth can get in to, you know, destroy it. Right? But store up treasures, not, and here's the thing, right? He would say, so don't store up treasures in this life, in this world. Why? Because in this life and in this world, we still have the problem of death, which is the great destroyer, which is the great thief. So it doesn't matter whatever you store up, whatever you spend your life in pursuit of, building up, whatever status, stuff, success you attain to, death comes for us all, and like that, takes it all away. So why would you store up in this life, in this world? Why not live your life instead in storing up for eternity? Okay. Certainly goes off of the conviction, Christian conviction, that death has actually been defeated. And that victorious life outlasts death. And so again, it's the perspective, why in the world would you spend your life now in pursuit of the things that death is going to just kind of sweep away? Why wouldn't you instead spend your life, your whole life, in pursuit of what lasts and extends through eternity? All right, there's the first one. The second one is a little bit more confusing. It says, if the eye of the lamp of the eye is the lamp of your body, and if the eye is healthy, the body is full of light, and if the eye is unhealthy or bad, the body is full of darkness, and if the light within you is darkness, how great is the darkness, right? So this is a little bit strange. What's he saying here? It's actually not all that complicated. Jesus is just using idioms. If you would go into your Old Testament, especially in the book of Proverbs, at numerous places you might come across the word stingy, like Proverbs 23:6, don't eat the bread of a stingy person or marvel at his delicacies or whatever. And if you look at that word stingy, you might see a little footnote or a little asterisk, and you go down and you look at the footnote, and it would say, literally in the Hebrew, has an unhealthy eye. Okay? Right? To have an unhealthy eye is literally just another way of saying stingy. If I said, hey, that person over there, they got quite the unhealthy eye, I'm basically calling them stingy. They hold their things a little too tightly and they don't share. And then you come back into the passage, a healthy eye, as it says there, actually the Greek word there is a single. So if your eye is single, it could be saying that, you know, your eye has a singular focus on what is good, right? But actually, if you dive in just a little bit further and you see where that word single is used in other times in the New Testament, in a noun form, it's often used to describe generosity. So like Romans 12, when, you know, Paul is exhorting people in the church who have the gift of giving, make sure they give generously. You could say it's the same word there, to give singularly. Or in James 1, let anybody who lacks wisdom ask the Lord, ask God who gives and supplies generously, right? Or singularly, right? So all to say, in this strange idiomatic verse, Jesus is basically contrasting the life of generosity versus the life of stinginess, right? And if the eye is an unhealthy eye, right, we're reflecting a life that is stingy versus a life that is generous and giving, right? And then the other one, no one can serve two masters. Okay, just a very simple statement of fact. You can't serve two masters. Your life cannot be lived in the service of two masters. Right? You'll either be employed, or to use the slavery image from back then, you'll either be enslaved to one master, and as a result, you won't be in service to, you won't be enslaved to another master because they have rival intentions. Right? It's just a statement of fact. You cannot, your life cannot be in service to two masters, and then here's the other point, your life cannot be in service to God as a master and to money or mammon or material possessions as a master. It just can't. If you're in service to one, you won't be in service to the other. All right, so there's your three little wisdom statements. Don't store up treasures in a place where it's just going to get eaten away. Store up treasures for eternity. Don't have the unhealthy eye, but have a healthy eye that is so that the whole body is full of light, right? Talking about generosity. And make sure you understand, if you're in service to money and mammon and material stuff, you're not in service to Christ. All right, is everybody still with me? All right, which then gets us to the talk about anxiety. And here's the important part. He says, don't be anxious about your life. Don't be anxious about what you're going to wear. Don't be anxious about what you're going to eat. But what's really important here, if you have, in my Bible, there's a little break in the passage. And I have a new subject heading there. You know, in verse 25, my mind breaks the passage up and it'll say, do not be anxious is my subject heading there. And so maybe if you're at home and you're reading through this, maybe one day you're going to read verses 19 through 24 and then you see a break. And so you're going to stop and put it on hold and come back tomorrow and you're going to read verse 25 down through the end of the chapter. Okay, I need you to see here, there's no break in this passage. The passage is meant to all flow together, and the key word to show you that is the word in verse 25, therefore. Okay, it's a connecting word, right? What we're going to talk about now is in connection to what we've just talked about. In other words, look, Jesus is saying this, because I know that it's a very real threat and a very real possibility that you would be tempted to serve two masters, or think that you could serve two masters, or because I know that it's a real danger and a real possibility that you are going to live a life more of stinginess than generosity, or because I know it's a real possibility that you're going to be tempted to store up treasures in this life, therefore, don't be anxious about your life. Because those are real possibilities, real dangers, here's what I want you to focus on. I don't want you to be anxious. Or in other words, he's saying, look, don't be anxious because this is what having an anxious life is going to do, right? If you're concerned about what you're going to eat, if you're concerned about what you're going to wear, if you're concerned about the well-being and the blessings of your life down the road tomorrow, what's that going to cause you to do? It's going to cause you to, try to store up what you can today to hold you over into tomorrow. Or it's going to cause you to be tight-fisted around the things that you have, not open and generous. Or it might cause you to become enslaved to material things or to the pursuit of money because you're worried about what tomorrow is going to bring. Okay, do you see that? Or if I could put it one other way, I've sometimes heard people read from this passage and say, you see here, anxiety is a sin. Jesus says, don't be anxious. And if you're being anxious, you're sinning because you're doing something Jesus told you not to do. Okay, I understand what they're saying there, but it's taking it terribly out of context. It's making that division in the passage. For Jesus, anxiety is not the sin. Anxiety is what leads to the sinful behavior or the unrighteous behavior. Do you see that? I mean, goodness, you go down to the very last verse of the chapter and he says, look, don't be anxious about tomorrow. Tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. He's actually acknowledging that there is enough trouble going on in the own day to be concerned about. Again, anxiety is not the sin. Anxiety is what leads to, potentially, this compulsion to store up treasures and to hold tight to them and not to be generous with them and to be enslaved and in service to them because I'm anxious about what tomorrow's going to bring. Okay? So that, there you go, number one, that's the problem with anxiety. Are we all on the same page? Two, what's the alternative to anxiety? Well, on the one hand, it's a life lived generously. It's a life lived storing up for eternity. It's a life lived in service to Christ, not in service to money and mammon and all that stuff. Or, just more simply, if you ask me, the key verse is down in verse 33, where instead of all that, you are seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Right? So watch out for all this. Don't be so consumed with anxiety. But instead, seek first the kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Here's where I'm going to talk about simplicity. I think Jesus is advocating for a very simple life, a life that is lived simply in pursuit of the kingdom and the rightness of God and his kingdom. Now, hear me out. It's not an external simplicity. Initially, the way we, maybe like culture talks about simplicity, declutter, de-stuffocate, all that stuff, get rid of schedule. We're not talking about an external simplicity. We're talking about an internal first simplicity. Internally, in your mind, in your heart, seek first the kingdom. Right? Let your love be for the kingdom, not the accumulation of stuff, not the accumulation of status, not the accumulation of success or whatever. But in your heart, seek first, desire the kingdom in your own life and throughout creation, simply put. Now, it would lead to perhaps some external simplicities. You might get rid of some things as I kind of prioritize my life, but just first and foremost, it's an internal simplicity. And, or I'll say it this way, Richard Foster, he says, you know, part of the problem with anxiety, or part of the problem with just humans in modern Western culture, is that we have a whole bunch of divided selves. And these divided selves, they're individual and they're autonomous and they wage war with one another. So much so that if you were to get up in them early in the morning and, I don't know, go out and sit on the back deck and enjoy a nice cup of coffee, enjoy the breeze that God is sending, enjoy the birds chirping into the air before all the locusts and stuff start coming out. Well, part of you is going to sit there and enjoy that and delight in that. But then you have this other, I don't know, businessy self that is constantly consuming about the loss of precious time, where I could be getting some things done at this point while the kids are still sleeping and I have some time to myself here in the morning. Or you have the energetic and a distracted self that is just now totally impatient and getting frustrated about things. Or maybe even he would say you have the hyper-religious self that is concerned that, well, I'm just sitting out here enjoying the breeze and my coffee and when I could be in the Word studying, or I could be, you know, sending an evangelistic message to one of my neighbors, or my, you know, something like that. Right? We have all these divided selves. And so what Richard Foster advocates, man, yet life can become so much more simple when we just hear Jesus' command, seek first the kingdom and its righteousness and his righteousness. And real quickly here, I have to give the reminder, anytime we hear that, see that word kingdom used, we have to remember that evangelical Christians in 20th century, We've had this problem where, and we've talked about this before, so I'm not going to go too deep into it, but we've had this tendency to read that word kingdom and just spiritualize it or personalize it. And we think that kingdom is just some internal, spiritual, personal thing. And we just got to encourage you, remember, kingdom in its grandest scale, right? Everything that we've been talking about recently when we were in the Lord's Prayer, what does it mean when we talk about kingdom? It's praying, Lord, your kingdom come, your will be done, just like it's being done in heaven, perfectly, the way your kingdom is happening perfectly in heaven. That kingdom happen on earth as it is in heaven. Not just in my own life, but in my life, in the life of my family, in the life of my neighborhood, in the life of my church, wherever, Lord, you send me, your kingdom come. Well, we remember last week, right, when Jesus began his public ministry. We saw this in Luke chapter 4, where Jesus says, I am here to announce good news to the poor, and recovery of sight to the blind, and the setting at liberty those who are oppressed. And I'm just saying, for a lot of times, sometimes, you know, Christians, we hear that term, care for the poor, or care for the sick, or care for those who are suffering injustice, and we tend to think, well, that's either social gospel stuff, and we don't do that because we're conservative, or we think that's political stuff, and we don't do that because we're the church, and that's very separate stuff. I'm even hearing that today with all this All this talk about injustice and everything. You have some Christians, some very prominent Christians, even some pastors from out in the West Coast who I know have particular influence, and even in this congregation, I'm hearing them say, no, we don't talk about that stuff because that's social justice stuff, or social gospel stuff, or that's political stuff. God, it just burns me to no end. So I'm not going down that end. Just understand it for Jesus. Here's the king saying, I'm here with good news for the poor. I'm here with recovery of sight to the blind. I'm here to set at liberty those who are captive and oppressed. That's big picture kingdom. So when we're saying seek first the kingdom, we're saying my life is lived wanting to be all in on. I want to be adopting the values, the priorities of the king and his kingdom. I want my life to be in service to the mission, to the advance of this great kingdom. Right? So there it is. Seek first the kingdom as the alternative to an anxious life. Now, leaves open, lastly, how do we get there? Okay, I see the alternative to the anxious life is to just pursue the kingdom, but I have no idea how I get there, how I dial back some of the anxious thoughts and live more singularly into the kingdom. So here we'll just say two things as we begin to wrap this up. First of all, you see Jesus' own admonition there. Hey, press into, remember, delight in this intense love that I have for you, my people. Right? You can be free to live with abandon this kingdom life I'm calling you because I love you and I'm going to care for you. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to take care of you. And he gives the two classic examples. Look at the birds out there. They're not, you know, toiling and building barns and storing things away in the barns so that for a rainy day or whatever, they're going about their business and I take care of them. Or look at the lilies, which he then calls the grass of the field, which is alive today and then tomorrow is tossed and burned. Basically, this is insignificant stuff that nobody really cares for. Look at how lavish I am towards them. Don't you think you, who are my treasure in my creation, who I delight in to no end, don't you think I'm going to care for you, provide for you? It's kind of like a parent, you know, as a mom or dad, if you're ever trying to get your kids to try something new or exciting or something you would think would be fun for them and they're all nervous or cautious, like you want to tell them, hey, you know I love you, right? You know I'm never ever going to put you into harm's way intentionally, or I'm never going to be, you know, lead you into something and not be there to care for you for it. That's the plea here. Remember, I love you deeply. You're my treasured, you know, possessions of my creation. I'm going to care for you. Not to mention, I've already proven that to you, right? I already gave what was most precious to me, my own son, to lay down his life so that you could be forgiven, so your life could be restored in relationship with me, so that I could draw you back into the rich life I always intended for you, right? You see how much I am concerned for you. Why would you think that all of a sudden as you pursue the kingdom, I'm not going to back off and I'm not going to care for you? You know, or remember too, that Jesus who was given to suffer and to die is also the Jesus who rose victorious over death. And we've been assured through the ministry of the Spirit, that we are full participants already in his victory over death. Right? And so, yeah, we can live free from this consuming desire to accumulate whatever stuff, status, success in the here and now. We can live with abandon into the kingdom because we know death is defeated and we know I'm a full participant in what is coming. Man, this was so big for the early church. We've talked about this. And you see the early church almost being reckless with their life in pursuit of the kingdom. Why? Because they're convinced that somebody come walking out of a tomb. And so death has been defeated, so I don't need to worry about what all is going to be taken from me at death because I know I've got eternity coming. So why wouldn't I just live simply, singularly in pursuit of the kingdom? So first and foremost, as with all of these disciplines, how do I move into that kind of life? Well, we remember the gospel. We remember the good news of God's love, of his victory over death, of his constant faithfulness to us. And then lastly, the other thing that we do, as with a lot of these disciplines, is, well, the disciplines are part of the pathway to developing more of that kind of life. Like, remember when we talked about submission? On the one hand, we're called to a general life of submission, but part of how we get there and we get in the just natural, more natural flow of life of submission is that we identify very particular and specific ways, okay, that I'm going to place myself in submission to my family or to my neighbor or to my church this week. And as I continue to do that and I develop that habit and that pattern, my life becomes more a life lived in submission the way Christ calls me to. Same with simplicity, right? To have that singular focus, we identify particular ways that maybe we can simplify, reorient, and live more in pursuit of the kingdom. And I'll just give you just some very just practical, specific things, but man, as with all of these disciplines, there's a wealth of information out there, great ideas, great resources. Richard Foster, a great place to start. But just to keep with the passage, you see here that it's almost like in this context, the rival to the kingdom life is the pursuit of wealth and stuff and security. So I would just say, in, as you begin to think about, okay, what would it, might it leave, look like to very practically make decisions to live more simply for the kingdom, I would say maybe find very specific ways that you could live more generously, if you will. In other words, Richard Foster would say that the idea that you're beginning to get it is that your mindset is, okay, first of all that I have is given to me by God. All that I have is God's to protect. And all that I have is open to others, just the way all that Christ has is open to me. Right? So maybe you sit down as a family and you try to think, okay, how can we take some of the resources that have been given to us and in order to live more singularly for the kingdom this week, how can we offer some of these resources to somebody else? How do I offer my home? That's a strange thing to do nowadays in days of coronavirus and all that. I don't know. How do I offer my home? How do I make more of my home more open to people in service to the kingdom? Or how do I make my car? Or how do I make my time or resources or whatever? I would say this, too. A lot of people will talk about this, where okay, part of living more simply for the kingdom is that we have to reject the whole cultural narrative that you are what you consume and that the measure of a man is what he acquires and the status that he has and the success that he has. So part of intentionally living more simplicity is maybe as a family you're going to try to find ways to tune out those influences in your life. Or maybe when you see a commercial come on to say, hey, your life is nothing until you have this piece of clothing or something. Together as a family, you're going to go over the top and laugh at that as an idea of rejecting that notion that my life is in any way somebody defined by what kind of clothing I have on that day. Which then maybe leads you to, I don't know, the practice of, well, okay, so instead of maybe I'm going to change my perspective on my clothing and I'm going to wear clothing until it wears out, like literally, versus I'm going to wear clothing until some style sophisticate in France tells me, well, it's no longer in fashion anymore, and so you got to go get something else. I don't know. And so as I'm holding on to my clothing longer, I have a little extra money in my resources, and so I'm going to give that money to somebody or something. Right? I'm going to choose simplicity so that I have more resources to give away. That's sort of the idea of kingdom-minded simplicity sometimes. You know, maybe as a family, you would choose to we'll put into practice a little bit what we learned last week, and we'll choose to fast together. Maybe just one meal a week. Maybe one dinner a week. We're going to choose to fast, and I don't know what we'll do during that. We'll pray or do something. But right there, I don't know, is that $25? If you have a family of, right now, seven like we do, $25. Well, maybe I'll take that $25, and I'll save it up and find a ministry that I can give it to, right? Well, 4 weeks, that's $100 a month, $1,200 a year. That's a significant amount of money that your family could give, right? It's choosing an act of simplicity so that you have resources freed up to give. Or I'll just give one more example. You know, maybe we get more in the habit before we of making purchases where we're actually going to pray about that. And this is fresh on my mind because I was a little bit convicted about it yesterday. Not convicted, but I just kind of thought about it. Where, so we have sort of some money tucked away, saved away, that we had been saving for a pop-up camper. We like to go camping and always just taking tents and got rain on tents. We thought we'd start, you know, someday maybe get a pop-up camper or whatever. And we finally got to the place yesterday where we started to think, okay, we were maybe able to do that. And we started looking around online for these used pop-up campers. And as we, you know, started doing that, boy, that was the excitement. Okay, we can go get a pop-up camper. And so we're looking at every opportunity. And well, I don't know if we really like that, but it's a pop-up camper. So let's go after it and let's go get it. And I just wondered, and I got to thinking, maybe we should be just kind of stopping and praying. Lord, hey, would you provide for us a pop-up camper? And maybe God might choose to give us a pop-up camper at a cheaper price than we would have thought. And so some of the extra money that's there, we could give it away or something like that, as opposed to just jumping out and maybe spending a little over budget because we need to have it right now. I will warn you, there's a danger if you start praying in that way. God might come along and actually say, you know what, I don't think you need a pop-up camper. This happened to Amy one time. It's kind of a funny story in our family where she had been saving for a while for a dining room table. And finally had enough money. We started looking at a dining room table. And then all of a sudden we got a letter from one of the missionaries in India that we were supporting at the time, very minimally. And it showed a picture of all these orphans at the orphanage who didn't have a dining room table. And don't you know, God seemed to lay on her heart that those kids need a dining room table more than we needed a dining room table. I don't even want to go down that road. But anyway, they got a dining room table, and Amy did, and she would be happy to tell you that. No, she would. I don't know why I'm going down the road. All to say that there's all these fun and creative ways that you can choose to try to live more simply, so that as an act of living more simply into the kingdom, you have resources to give. You have time to give. Maybe you're going to simplify your time so that you have opportunity as a family to build relationships with a neighbor across the street or something more so than you did. Or maybe you're going to simplify expectations so that you're not afraid of your neighbor and all the status symbols they've got in their parking, in their driveway. I don't know what. But you're starting to get the picture. All in all, the idea here is anxiety is a problem because it will lead us to tighten up and to restrict and to not move adventurously into the kingdom. So the alternative is to cultivate a life that is singularly devoted to the kingdom. And how do we do that? Remember the gospel. Remember the love of Christ. Remember his promises. Remember what he's already done. And then we begin to just take little steps to cultivate more of a life of simplicity that begins to break one chain off, so that we find ourselves just more free as a whole to live more simply in pursuit of the kingdom. And I'm excited about Matt and Trina because they get to go out and they get to do kingdom life together as a family and as a full-time, you know, gig. And I'm excited for you guys that you get to go out and do that. And my simple charge or admonition for you guys would be, man, just go all in on that and just recognize that that is the good life. The rich life of pursuit of the kingdom, singularly. And man, just be excited about that and press into that together as a family. Find ways to do it together as a family with the kids. And for the rest of us, remember we too are full-time called into the kingdom. You haven't been called to the rugged wilderness of Montana. You're the fertile plains of Delaware County. And maybe you're not leading kids on wilderness trips. But you were called to use your gifts in the medical community or the world of commerce or in the home, raising children or caring for, you know, your retired parents who are with you or whatever it is. And the simple life is just singularly devoted to the kingdom, seeing all of your time, resources, energy, whatever, gifts in pursuit of the kingdom, advancing the kingdoms, adopting the kingdom's values, and manage to do that. You're going to be blessed richly together. So may God lead us in that life of simplicity for the kingdom's sake. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, we ask. Amen.